And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the chapter from the good book that we're going to study today is about political opportunism, because I think that's what lies at the heart of what happened this week throughout politics in the United States, or at least in Washington and Scranton, and probably best understood that way. I mean, Scranton, somebody ought to write a play about it. Could be a musical comedy about politics in Scranton.
It's always a comedy, isn't it?
Except if you live in Scranton.
In what case is a tragedy?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you just had an election. You just had this guy Note Ariani, who got himself elected last time and as a Democrat, and couldn't make a deal with the other Democrat. Got himself reelected as a Democrat. Still can't make a deal. What's going on here? Let's not make a deal. Is that the show?
That's not. You know, Monty Hall is dead.
Yeah.
I mean, for four years, the two Democrats who were on the county commissioners were at political odds with one another. And what happened, Jerry Notariani, who was the top vote getter, got frozen out. The story supposedly was that because he had such animosity towards his running mate, Pat O'Malley, that he tried to make a deal with the minority commissioner, the Republican Lorene Cummings, and botched that so badly with an attitude of either him or his henchmen that she teamed up with O'Malley and wound up freezing him out. Now,
and Lorene O'Malley Cummings was the Tea Party Republican.
Right.
So it wasn't like when he was trying to make a deal with her that he was carrying the Democratic Party policy banner, because he was making a deal with a Tea Party Republican, and he couldn't do that.
No, he failed to do that.
He failed to do it, but he didn't fail to do it because they disagreed on policy. That didn't seem to matter. It was all the crudest kind of patronage disagreement, right?
Yeah, and who would run things? And Notariani felt that because of his experience and because he was a top vote getter, that he'd handle things, and all Lorene Cummings had to do was rubber stamp it, and she would get a few of the things that she wanted along the way, somewhere, somehow.
And Notariani, he's part of the group that is more or less led by Charles Volpe, right?
Yeah, years ago, he was on Volpe's commission to try to change the form of county government to do away with the commissioners and to go to a council. So he's in that that group, and O'Malley was more aligned with the Brazil family group, and we had 4 years of this conflict going on.
But there
and
was then, no conflict because basically they ignored Notariani, right?
Yeah, they had this. But the idea was that with this election, that there would be a cleansing of the political processes. And it just didn't work out that way very, very much. Once again, he got paired up with someone who he didn't originally want to run with. He ran with a guy named George Kelly, and Pat O'Malley ran with Debbie Dominick, and wound up Dominick came in with the second slot, and O'Malley got left out. And Notariani and Dominick supposedly, at least on the surface, patched up their differences and won as a majority team. And supposedly they had a deal going on in terms of appointments of personnel, that Notariani would get to pick the chief of staff and Dominick would get to pick the county solicitor. And when push came to shove, Dominick found out that she didn't have a say in this, and that Notariani had gone with the minority Republican commissioner, Chris Chermak, and gotten his person to be the solicitor as well as the as well as the his choice for chief of staff.
So wait a minute. So the Republican chose both?
Well, the Republican he was the deciding vote on the solicitor. On the chief of staff, I can't recall exactly. I think both Dominic and Notarianni went for Brian Jeffers.
All right, so here we have the sleaziest kind of politics, the kind of thing that happens that makes people not vote, because what's the point, right?
Yeah. And, one wonders whether this is just political arrogance, whether it's a lack of political skill, or whether, does Notarianni have a woman problem? Because both times he was unable to get agreement from women county commissioners.
Whom he had made a deal with ahead of time in each case.
Right.
That he then broke.
Well, apparently.
Fabulous.
So we had...
Did the former commissioners, O'Malley and Lorene Cummings, did they actually achieve anything in the time that they were in office, the 4 years?
Well, they consolidated into one the county government into one building. Remember, they bought the old Globe Store building.
Yeah. That's it? That's it?
Well, the county kind of runneth itself, pretty much. I'm sure they had political appointments there, but the county is in the best financial shape of all the government entities in the county. The city of Scranton's in terrible shape, and a lot of the other municipalities are not in great shape. The county pretty much is doing okay, although they tapped into the rainy day fund in order to avoid raising taxes. The other thing they did or they didn't do was to have a reassessment, which now I will have to see. Notarianni has come out and said he definitely wants a reassessment. It's 40 years in the making. 40 years that the county has not been reassessed. We're the longest in Pennsylvania without a reassessment.
But that's going to play havoc with a lot of old people.
Well, that's the problem, of course. That's the problem, of course, and that's why nobody wanted to do it. On the other hand, it seems to be an impediment to everything else, to development. It's an impediment to the city in terms of its tax raising abilities, whether or not the city's underassessed, things like that. So we'll just have to see what happens. But it was not an auspicious start.
But I mean, you say the county runs itself, Lackawanna County, but it doesn't run itself. It stagnates by itself. It doesn't develop to develop it has, and I'm not talking just economic development, but to develop in any respect, it has to have leadership. You're not describing a situation where there was any leadership. If the thing that you reached for when I asked you what did they achieve was that they bought a building and moved their office into it. That's a big achievement if you're a Donald Trump real estate developer, but not otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, you're not seeing a lot of, as I said, economic development. There was a story this week in the New York Times about how the Lehigh Valley has kind of gotten its act together in light of losing a lot of jobs with Bethlehem Steel and such, and seem to have done a fairly good job, although it's in dispute, in terms of economic development. Lackawanna County doesn't seem to have a lot of action going on. You have some small... you see some small businesses opening up here and there, but not a lot of big projects going on.
Well, it's the same thing in the county I live in Susquehanna County, just north of you. The county is flush. It's got a lot of money. The reason it has a lot of money is because the guests, they get gas money from the state.
Yeah.
They don't get what they should be getting, but they get it. And since they don't do anything, they don't have to spend any of the money, so therefore it's flush. But there's no jobs. There's no growth of population. The schools are consolidating because there's not enough kids to keep these schools open. There's a general listlessness everywhere. There's a general feeling of nothing's happening. And that's the result of no leadership. It's just that simple. Could something happen? You don't know until you try. But what you do know is that for the last at least 8 years and maybe 16 years, nobody's tried. And for the last 8 years, for sure, the county leadership said it wasn't their job to try. Their job is to be counterpunchers. If anything happens, they have to react. But if you asked any of them, well, what do you want to do? What do you see 5 years down the line? 4 years, 3 years, 2 years? It's not our job to think that way. But that's nonsense. That's ridiculous.
Well, don't forget that in some ways that's the Republican idea of government.
That is the Republican idea of government. And the Susquehanna County government was led by a Republican and a Democrat who bought into the Republican idea of government.
Republican light, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's going on all over the country. Now, interestingly, in the city of Scranton, we talked about whether there's going to be a new, turnover, a new leaf in the county. There's high hopes with the new mayor, the first woman mayor, and she's an outsider from. She did not grow up in the
Paige Cognetti.
Yeah, in the Scranton area, she grew up out of state. And she's had other experiences. She's worked on Wall Street. She worked for the Obama administration. So she's got a completely different background and outlook on things. But she immediately ran into some problems with some letter writers in the Scranton Times who said, how dare she bring her kid to work and spend taxpayer money on putting the kid in a room next door to her.
She gave birth to the kid last week, right? Or 2 weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, the small-mindedness, the narrow-mindedness, the total lack of wanting to see something succeed rather than, it's the mentality, well, I don't have anything good, so why should anybody else have anything good?
Right.
That kind of thing. And I think that's a minority view, but it still was something that we saw. By the way, there was another fallout from the county commissioner race. I'm hearing reports that the loser of the race, the fourth candidate, the other Republican, Mike Ginetta, is thinking of running again for another office, this time for state representative. He ran before as a Democrat twice and lost. Now he's reaffirming his Republican roots and wants to run against Bridget Malloy Kaczorowski.
But what makes him, what you say, Republican roots? He was a Republican who ran as a Democrat?
Well, he's been a Democrat, he's been a Republican, he's been an independent. Now he's back into Republican and he's sinking roots in. He sees his opportunism right now with the Republican Party. The Democrats aren't about to give him anything. But the interesting way of thinking behind this is, given that Bridget Malloy Kaczorowski won a fairly substantial victory, the seat was held previously by Democrat who died unexpectedly in office, Sid Kovulich. Why would he think, after coming off a loss, why would he take on somebody who's got some political power and clout? And from what I understand, the thinking is 2020 is going to have Donald Trump at the head of the ticket, and the Republicans are going to come out in droves, and there's going to be a down ballot effect that Trump is going to have, coattails.
Well, you have the same thing with another former Democrat who's now going to challenge Cartwright. In his seat as a Republican, right?
Yeah, we saw that this week. There are already three announced Republicans in that, but everybody thought that the Republicans had the party bosses and the money had settled on its candidate, a former Army veteran who is an amputee. And lo and behold, the former mayor of Hazleton, Michael Mariscano, has decided that he was going to switch parties and jump into the race as a Republican. And It's been a Democratic district, and why would he think that a Republican, you know, could win, especially a former Democrat? And the only thing I can think of, he feels that, again, the Cartwright seat has been targeted by Republicans, and that that the Trump effect would sweep someone into office.
Now, you told me that the Republicans are looking for a wave of Republican votes that nobody seems to know about, but which they know or think they know about, right?
Right.
Votes over and above what they got in the 2018 votes that would come out for the 2020 vote.
Right.
And tell that story.
Well, they believe that there was a fall off in votes for the Republicans, and it's questionable. Their version is across the country there was an 8 million vote lapse of Republicans that voted in 2016 and didn't come out in 2018. I was led to believe after 2018 that the Republican vote was actually pretty solid. There wasn't much of a drop off, but the Democrats just outperformed anything that they had done previously or anybody had done previously in a midterm election. We know that Trump is really trying to squeeze more juice out of the lemon. He believes that not only can he hold every single vote that he got before, but people who were inclined to vote for him that didn't come out, he can get even more of them. That's going to be the test. It's going to be a turnout election, and we're going to have to see whether that's true or not true. By the way, you know, we talk about the Cartwright team. You know, the Republicans have already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars attacking him. I did see a commercial this week, and I only saw it once. I don't know how much the media buy was. Supporting Matt Cartwright and talking about all the bills that he's passed and emphasizing health care. So it's not by his part, by his campaign. It's by one of the national organizations. Hmm. So he's getting help there. And it's awful early because, you know, the nominating papers aren't even out yet.
Well, that brings us to the national election, of course.
Yeah.
And we see all this political opportunism. On the part of the Republicans, it seems to be based on their thought that Trump is going to have coattails. So that has to bring us to Trump.
Yeah, although, you know, it's a funny thought that he's going to have coattails because over 25 Republican congressmen have decided not to run.
Yeah, because they don't see him having any coattails.
Yeah, they were worried about the Democratic wave continuing.
Yeah.
And but the Trump people seem to believe it. And of course, Trump, you know, the things he's going to emphasize are the economy. And now he's emphasizing his toughness. And that's something that the Democrats don't seem to understand, that part of the appeal of Republicans, not just Trump, is that they're seen as being strong and assertive, and the Democrats are seen as being weak. And there's a certain appeal to that that white, older voter of strength that they like to hear or whatever. So we had Trump asserting himself the last week or so with the military strike on the head of the Iranian guard and taking him out, and then watching the consequences flow from that.
Well, the consequence of this, I mean, that was a phenomenal event. As far as I'm concerned, that's an act of war. That's Trump taking the United States to war against Iran. I mean, the only justification, and they themselves know this, they said this, is that they were heading off an imminent attack on the United States. And that's what they said. There's an imminent attack. But when they were asked where, what, they said nothing. They couldn't say. And in fact, Pompeo Thursday said, we never know where it's coming from or where it's directed. You can't know that. But by Friday, the next morning, he said it was going to be against four different embassies. So,
and then Trump came out and said one of them was Iraq.
Was the Iraq embassy. Right, exactly.
Which, of course, had been under siege previously.
It's been under siege. So where did he learn all this? He learned all this from the intelligence departments, the 19 of them, which he's been saying for the last 3 years are incompetent.
Yeah, you can't believe them.
Can't believe them. That's right. So how did he learn it? And how did he learn it Thursday night? Anyway, if he learned it Thursday night, what he did was the previous week.
Well, there was one report that he was pushed into doing something by Republican senators who wanted action on Iran, but who he needs in the impeachment trial that's forthcoming. So that it was sort of a something that he gave them in hopes for, dare I say, quid pro quo, their support, which I thought he had anyway in the impeachment battle.
But in the meanwhile, he violated the Constitution. He violated the international treaties. He violated international law. Nobody seems to be making any point about that.
Well, Nancy Pelosi did, because they passed a resolution in the House of Representatives saying that he couldn't do anything with regard to Iran without consent of Congress.
Right.
And they actually got three Republicans to vote with them.
Right. The Iraqi legislature voted that the Americans should get out of Iraq. And the prime minister then sent a letter on Friday saying he would like to meet with the representative of the United States to discuss getting out of Iraq. And the State Department issued a statement saying they're not going to have such a meeting. They won't discuss getting out of Iraq. Well, you know what that's called? That's called colonialism. If you have a base in a country and that country's government doesn't want you and you won't get out, you're asserting the right of extraterritoriality, which is a right of colonialism. It's not a right of anything else. So making America great again seems to be making America like the French and English empires of the 1890s.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Trump's been all over the place on all over everything on this. Remember, he said that the Iraqis should be paying us.
Yeah, right. They owe us billions. Until they pay us billions, because that's what it costs to build this thing, this base, we're not leaving. Well, the Syrians, we're not leaving Syria until we get their oil. He said that, remember?
Yeah. Well, that's where he protected things. And, of course, getting the Americans out of Iraq has been one of the Iranians' hopes. And, of course, he just made it easier for the Iraqis to ask the Americans out.
Well, this imbecile Trumps and his imbecile henchmen obviously have no concept of how to do what they say they want to do. Nor do they seem to have any concept of how to get done what they really want to do in disguising it properly. He said he wants to get out of war. Instead, he's brought us into war. What he really wants to do is guarantee that he has control of the oil. But what he does is so ham-handed that the people who he needs to rely on to steal the oil are repudiating him.
Right. Yeah, he... There is no light touch there.
No.
There is no light touch there. And it continues to, you know, but again, he thinks just being tough on the surface makes you tough. What we really saw was he backed off pretty quickly. The Iranians, you know, threw a few rockets and he said, that's enough. I don't have to do anything more. I've threatened to do more. I'll threaten to wipe them off. You know, I'm going to hit 52 targets, including cultural targets, which, of course, is against international law.
Oh, that was very interesting, because that prompted the defense secretary to say, we won't do that. Do you remember any time in your memory that the defense secretary or the war secretary said to the president, we will not carry out your orders? I don't.
I don't. Mad Dog Mattis resigned rather than...
He resigned, but he didn't say, we won't carry out your orders. This guy didn't resign, Esper, but he did say, we won't carry out that order. I mean...
You know, these are echoes of some of the things we've heard from inside the White House where people weren't carrying out orders. You know, Don McGahn...
Yeah.
Wouldn't fire... who was it that he was supposed to fire?
He was supposed to fire the Attorney General.
The Attorney General, yeah, and things like that. And it's you keep hearing this stuff. And meanwhile, you know, there's a question. When Trump came out to give his speech, which is a really weird speech, touting, you know, it was more patting himself on the back than outlining a policy. He sounded terrible. They were late in having him come out. And something was going on behind the scenes. He came out and he was slurring words and he was doing that sniffling that he does and stuff like that.
Maybe this guy takes up his all day. Maybe he hadn't taken the pill that he needed to take.
Whatever.
You know, on Wednesday of last week, his official calendar showed one appointment. He had lunch scheduled. Except for the lunch, he was free the rest of the day. That's how hard he was. He's a hard worker.
Yeah.
He's a hard worker.
I know.
But I tell you, even though he's not a hard worker, his administration is hard at work. For example, they just last week came across with all kinds of horrors to intensify the environmental crisis. With new rules that they published saying that in construction projects, in public works projects, it is no longer necessary to take the impact on the environment of the public works project into account. And especially you're not to take into account secondary and indirect consequences.
Yeah. Right.
Now, the consequence of not taking into account secondary and indirect consequences is to basically destroy the environment.
Well, don't forget, the first thing he did when he got to office was to allow the mining companies in West Virginia and those places to deposit their refuse, their coal refuse, into rivers.
And that would be something that would not be regulated under these new rules because that's a secondary consequence.
Right.
It's like saying that when you're considering what it costs to produce a product, you don't take into account what it costs to transport the product from wherever it's made to the consumer. But, you know, that's really part of the production process. If you don't get it to the consumer, the consumer can't buy it. If the consumer can't buy it, then you won't produce it. This is a system of production to sell. So, but yet, transporting it is not direct production. It's a secondary aspect of production. So if you take that attitude toward the environment and you applied that to the economy wouldn't exist.
Well, this is just part of everything is done in isolation. Everything is done as a solo tactic without any strategy really behind it. And they concentrate on just that one thing without, as you said, seeing, you know, they're playing checkers. Well, the world is three-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
On that.
But they are paying attention to making sure that the owners of the fossil fuel companies, the gas companies, the oil companies, and the coal mining companies are protected as much as they can protect them.
But they keep going out of business.
The coal companies do because life is wiping them out. But to the extent that they can protect them, they do, no matter how much damage these industries do to the rest of the country and the world.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to see. This week, we learned that there's the impeachment papers are going to go from the House to the Senate.
That's right. And this week, we see also what the Iowa caucuses are just a few weeks away.
And there's going to be another debate.
Another debate. And at this moment, Bernie is the leader in Iowa, despite all the publicity about Buttigieg being the leader. It turns out now Bernie's the leader by 4 points.
Well, we'll have to see. Interesting. What happens there.
Yep. See you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps. Members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.